guys. Welcome to the Welding Business Returns Podcast, where podcasts are late, but our bids are on time. I'm your host, Kevin, with JMW Fabrication. For this episode series, I sat down with Adam Semmons from Semmons Steel Fabrication. I recorded this in a truck that I bought when I was driving back to our shop from Oklahoma, so my audio is not that great, but his is pretty good. But it's a podcast for welders, it's not a podcast for podcasters, so the content's good, the audio might not be as good as you guys usually expect, but it's all there. If you can't understand it, well, let me know. I'll fill you in on some details. Check out the cool stuff he does. He's over on Instagram at Semmons Steel Fabrication. That's S-E-M-M-E-N-S Steel Fabrication. Check us out at Welding Business Owners Podcast on Instagram and enjoy the show. What's up, Adam? You hear me?
Hi, Kevin. How you doing, mate?
I'm doing great, man.
Get this iPad set up.
Sure.
Somewhere that's not too bad. Hang on. There we go.
Good.
How are you? You still on your long drive home then?
I am. It was a 20 hour trip. I've got like 6 hours left. Yeah, it's definitely a long one. I'm in it for the long haul, but it's given me a great opportunity to talk to a bunch of random people who, you know, haven't really been on my like Instagram radar. So it's been really awesome. I've actually followed your stuff for a while, and dude, you do some awesome work, man.
Oh, thanks very much. It's cool. It seems really weird for me. I've been listening to your podcast since you started doing them, and you've had some pretty awesome people on there. People that I've, like, when I started out a few years back, was like, look it up. Guys like Drew over at Petty Welding and all, to be listening to those guys and then chatting to you on the same podcast is pretty awesome for me as well. So yeah, it's good. It's nice to catch up.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Did you see, like how did you find my podcast? Just because I haven't done any advertising. It's just a matter of word of mouth, and it has like grown like wildfire. So I'm always kind of curious, especially over in the UK, like how did you find out about it?
I think for me, I was listening to the Welding Tips and Tricks podcast, and then when those guys stopped putting out their podcasts on Apple Podcasts, and I pretty much listened to everything, I sort of ran out of content to listen to in the workshop for a while. So I just using Apple Podcasts, searched through for welding stuff. Yours came up. Which was sort of perfect for me, because at the time I started listening to it, we were sort of a couple of years into starting the business up. It just sort of gelled with what we were sort of wanting to do. And then also Art Junkies podcast as well has been brilliant. We've had a few, I say long trips, nothing like what you're doing at the moment. recently we've had to go away. Like we can't get a trip that long in the UK. We run out of country. You can't drive for that far. You get to one end and come back again. You couldn't do it. So I had to go off for like a 6 hour drive there recently to go off and do another course, and sort of smashed through about six or seven episodes of with you, and then did another six or seven with on Art Junkies podcast. So it's good. It's sort of nice. For me, I don't feel like it doesn't feel like work when you're listening to it, but at the same time, you're always learning. You're sort of listening to guys there's always somebody who's got more experience than I have, and there's always somebody who's been doing something longer or has got new skills. So anytime you can sort of plug in, chill out, and pick up new sort of skills and knowledge for work is a sort of a win for me, really.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It's funny because this all came out of have you ever been to FabTech over here in the States?
No, you guys have got it. It's really different. Maybe it's just a British sort of outlook looking at the way that you guys treat trades and especially like welding and fabrication. We don't get anything like that over here. Nothing at all. We've got small-ish trade shows, but nothing that's like, like FabTech. I don't know if it's just the way you guys all talk about it. It's like the rock and roll epiphany of welding out there pretty much. And I've never been. It's always been a dream to sort of come over. We've got some family in Houston, Texas. My wife's family moved out there, married out there, got kids out there the same age as me now. And we come over to Texas quite regularly, and I've always been trying to somehow manage to time it in that FabTech was on, but it's just never quite worked yet.
Well, yeah, it's, you know, I feel like this whole thing was born out of the meetups that we have after FabTech. And because, you know, I could talk for welding. I could talk about welding for days and days. I really just wanted to take the conversations that I had at FabTech and just record them for people, because they're so valuable and so in depth, because you like, you know, you've only got so much time to talk to somebody. And you barely even scratch the surface. So to take your time, you know, a couple hours, dig in deep as deep as you want on topics, and to put it out there for people, man, I'm like honestly, I do this, like, three quarters of the reason why I do this is just for myself and my own growth. And it's just kind of a bonus that other people get enjoyment out of it too, you know?
Well, I mean, a lot of things start like that. I don't know. You start with doing the thing that you want to do for yourself, and then sometimes you realize it can grow into a business, it can grow into something far bigger than we ever decide things are going to be when we start. Like,
yeah.
You will have never thought you'll be speaking to all these people and doing all of this with your podcast when you started out. Nobody ever really does that with business, do they? You can have aspirations, but you kind of never really know where they're going until you sort of follow the road and sort of takes you wherever you go, and however much effort you put into that you would where you end up, but you never really know where you're going to quite end up.
Yeah, I don't know how it is over there, but I feel like everybody who's ever picked up a welding rod and has struck an arc loves it. And if they have any sort of formal, like, schooling, or they're, you know, they're good at it, everybody wants to start a welding business. Everybody. Is it that way over there too?
Yeah, it can be. Yeah. I think I was discussing this with, it was with a builder, one of our customers today, and he was sort of bemoaning how difficult it is to get good staff at the moment. And he said, and he's like, it's not because he doesn't pay well. He said he pays well. He offers good package. There's a good pension with it. But he said, like, anybody who is really good tends to have aspirations, and he said they tend to not particularly want to end up working for somebody else. And when they can sort of do their own thing, they can be their own creative person. And in the same way for welding, like, which is really what's driven sort of me to try and make our business pretty much a one or two man affair, because everybody who seems to be really good either really wants really good money because they deserve to have really good money because they're a really good employee, or they're doing it on their own. And which is the beauty of it, that you can just go and start up on your own and get going. But yeah, I know what you mean. There's a lot of people out there welding up car doors and welding up vans and doing all bits and pieces because they want to be their own boss. But you're never going to get rich doing that, that's for sure. More power to you if you can.
So tell you what, I don't know much of your backstory. I just really follow what you put out there. So tell me how you got started in welding and how this whole thing kind of brought about itself to where you are today.
So I guess for me, the welding side was something started really young. My dad, who still works with me now, he was a farmer. He'd been a farmer all of his life, a dairy farmer. And just as all farmers do, we all used to repair our own stuff. Might not have always been the best repairs sometimes, but they were always sort of handled in house, and it tends to be on a Sunday afternoon when you break your mower or something. is back to the workshop, and dad would sort of put it back together again, and on it would go. It might break on Monday, but he got Sunday done. So I always spent my time as a kid in the workshop, out with him and bits and pieces. I went and trained. I did agricultural engineering when I left school. It was always sort of intended to be, if the farm side never worked out, I always wanted a sort of a fallback sort of career potentially that I could go back into. So through that, through the engineering side, we did some welding at college, nothing too much, but it was enough to sort of get me fairly interested. Then back at home, dad's site is a not what it used to be when he was a 35-year-old man either. So he sort of pretty much handed the reins of the welding side back at home over and said, look, you got better vision, you can see the arc pull. Get on, is your job to fix everything now. So I did, and we've always fixed bits and pieces. And we were dairy farming until 2018. And it just got really tight. We were a small business, small farm, couple of employees, and it just got really difficult to make money at that sort of scale without massively putting a lot of money in. We needed to buy a lot of land, and it just didn't become feasible. So we looked at other options and other avenues, which is when I can't even quite remember how we got into the steel side that we're doing now, if I'm 100% honest. It just sort of happened. I think somebody said, I've got something that needs repairing. And I said, oh yeah, I'll drop that off, I'll do it. And then I did one, and it was only like it was a topper, like a pasture topper for a farmer. I rebuilt it for somebody, and then somebody else said, I've got one like that. And then somebody had a trailer. And you know, like these things sort of snowball sometimes, don't they? And then before I knew it, the yard outside the workshop was just full of old other people's shit that pretty much needed bringing back to life again. So, and we did some really rubbish jobs. I look back now and like, there's no hope in hell I'd have took some of those jobs now. But I think it stands you in good ground sometimes. Sometimes you've got to take those jobs that you don't make any money on it, but you learn something. And you also learn, I think every time you do that job, you learn how to price better as well. So we did a load of those. And I'm going to lie, the first couple of years were financially fairly tough. I did sometimes feel like I've swapped cows for welding up other people's rubbish, and it was pretty hard going. But I learned. I went back to college. I went back in the evenings and did a load of welding courses and a load of training. I got my BS 4872, which is a relatively entry level welding qualification over here. So it's tested, it's qualified, but it's sort of like your entry. I guess it's the type of welding qualifications you'd get in college in your first couple of years before progressing on further. And that was enough for me for everything that I needed to do to start with. And we did that for a good couple of years. And then obviously we got whacked with the pandemic as well in 2020. We just started doing some stuff with builders in late 2019, and that was sort of progressing nicely. We ended up, of all places, at a funeral, like you do when you're chatting to somebody after a funeral. And it was a builder we knew who wanted some railings doing. We said, yeah, go on, we'll do those. And then that led on to another set and another set. And so it spiraled. And then one day they were like, we need two beams. A normal guy who's sorting them out, they're stacked out, they can't do it. Can you do two beams? So we said, yeah, go on then, we'll do that. I knew the welding side. I could read drawings and bits and pieces. So we went and did that. Then we got 2020, January 2020, pretty much everything got shut down on us. So we ended up going back to the farming stuff. And it just happened to be that the weather conditions over in the UK at that time went from a really wet winter to an incredibly dry spring. The ground went to concrete pretty much overnight. And we couldn't keep up with the amount of stuff that was outside. People were just smashing stuff up. And it saw us through. It saw us through, to be fair, when a lot of businesses shut down and a lot of businesses really kind of went under over here. We had enough work to keep us going. So that sort of kept us up to 2020. And then after that, the building site started opening back up again for us. And that's where we've diversified far more to now. We've pushed more into the structural steel. There was a real avenue in our area, I found, for good customer service base, like problem solving for other people. We had guys who they would come up against issues and bits and pieces, and I don't know if it was from all the years when we were farming and you become like a jack of all trades and you sort your own problems out, that when other people were presented with problems and they couldn't figure them out, we tended to figure the problems out for them. We always had lifting equipment. We had telescopic JCB handlers and bits and pieces. And Normally ended up, we'd go there to do steel and then end up spending the rest of the day there also moving pallets and blocks around with the telehandler and being paid to do that as well. And we just said, yeah, go on, if you want us there for the day, we'll be there for the day. We only went in for an hour in the morning to do two or three jobs for somebody and ended up spending the whole day there. And then they're another really valued customer for us.
Sure.
And it sort of worked fairly well like that. And the customer base has grown really nice, and we try to always be problem solving and pragmatic and look after the customer in a cost effective manner for them and in a way that's beneficial for us. And we're just in the process now of doing our UKC, which, don't get me wrong, I probably should have done what we're doing now earlier, but you kind of only ever jump when you can land on good solid ground. So we sort of waited for a while. And we're going through the process now. So we've had to do our full welder quals. All of the weld procedures have had to be documented, sent off. They've been fully destructive tested in a way that I've never been involved in doing it before, which was the next big step for us now, which give us our coverage and our is a safety net for us. We technically need it for the structural steel we're doing now to be the right side of the law, and it also just it covers us. There's an awful lot of people that aren't covered in that respect, but I found that I was starting to get a little bit uneasy with doing the work without knowing that we'd gone that extra step and done the extra qualifications, done the extra paperwork. And I've been sat in auditing all afternoon today, part one of the audit. So it was nice to get out and go for a walk earlier on and pick up a couple of messages from you guys. And it's been hard work, but it's going to be worth it in the end. And I think I've learned a lot too. We went away. I've done a lot of courses and gone away, and I feel my knowledge is not just a paperwork exercise. I feel like I've gained a lot. And I think I don't mind doing however many courses you got to do and however many paperwork exercises and bits and pieces sometimes you got to do. If you feel like you've learned something and bettered yourself, it always feels worth doing it. It's when you do these paperwork courses and bits and pieces you got to do, and you come out and you're like, I've just wasted 6 hours of my life and I never learned anything more than I went in there with. I think as long as you come out learning something, they feel like there's a slight benefit to them. And this was like that, to be fair. But
I don't think anybody likes the paperwork side of the welding industry either, so.
no, we're all you don't get into it because you like doing paperwork, do you? You become an accountant. We're all hands-on type of people, and the last thing I want to be doing is paperwork these days. And it seems to have spent a lot of time in the office this January getting ready for this. But it's got to be done, and it's being done. And after next week, hopefully we will be doing a lot more welding and a lot less paperwork again, fingers crossed. So see how it goes.
Nice. So right now it's just you in the shop, or you and your dad, or
It's just well, it's me 100% of the time, and dad's 68. He has no plans to retire. We lost my mum 6 years ago, and he was pretty much lost without mum. And sort of, I've said to him, like, you don't have to work. You're 68. You can, like, if you don't want to be working, you don't have to. And he's like, well, what would I do home all day on my own? He said, I might as well come to work. I live 100 meters away from the workshop, one direction. And my dad, we built him a new build house, and he lives 100 meters in the other direction from the workshop. So we just walk to work every morning. It's you couldn't have it any better, to be honest. One of the farm buildings now, what was our previous machinery shed, is now our workshop, which you see in all of the videos of the crane in and everything.
Yeah.
And so dad's down there most of the time with me. But and we've got another small little unit that one of my really good friends, Tom Myers, is working in now, and he does stainless steel, aluminium glass, frameless balustrading. And we're trying to gear it up that they're two separate businesses completely. But we're pooling labor and pooling resources between the two of us. So we're both self-employed, both do our own thing. But quite often when it comes to the installation, or if one person's really busy, Tom can come in and give me a hand. I can give him a hand. We don't need to have two forklifts at home. when his workshop is 50 meters away from mine. So we're sort of, he rents a use of ours. And I kind of want to just get myself geared up that we can be, I can be fairly self-sufficient, which is everything we've put into the workshop now has been aimed at trying to make it a fairly self-sufficient business. The crane has been the most, I don't know why I didn't buy 1 year ago. Again, we all have those tools, don't we? Where you're like, you buy it and you're like, why didn't I do that 5 years ago? Why didn't I do that ages ago? My life is so much better with that in the workshop.
Absolutely.
I'm sure when I finally get around to getting an iron worker, I'm going to feel the same. Everyone keeps telling me I need to bin off the mag drill and get myself an iron worker. And I do, and I've just not got around to it. And I think that's going to be the other machine that I'm going to be like, why didn't I do this years ago?
I vividly remember the time when I got, like, we got our iron worker, and I'm like, oh my gosh, never having to drill holes again. Like, I mean, not never, but like, holy smokes, it has opened up so many doors for us. Well, not so many doors, but more of the jobs that come through our door, we can now be competitive with other places who are, you know, laser cutting holes or whatever. Well, that's okay, because like, we can punch them out. Clip angles. We do, we have a couple products that we make for other companies. And man, I remember drilling, you know, there are sprinkler head guards that go in between pallet racks, because so when you put sprinklers in the pallet racks, they have to protect the heads so that you don't go up too high with the pallet and bust it off. So really, it just mounts with two clip angles on either end, and there'd be four holes per piece or per guard, because there's two on either side, and we get an order of like 600 of them. And I remember the first two orders we did, we drilled 2,400 holes by hand in a freaking drill press, and it was like, I didn't even do it. I had my guys do it. And it was just, you just sit on the drill press for days, just banging out holes. Like, it was monotonous. I honestly would be pretty miserable doing it. But now that we can punch the holes, I mean, it takes us, instead of days, it takes us hours. Like, I would say, you know, to like, if we get an order for 600 clips or 600 pieces, that's 1,200 clips, we can probably shear them and punch them in a day, probably a little bit over a day, including cutting the material. So it is like the iron worker. Oh my gosh, everybody's right. You're going to say, why didn't I do this earlier?
It comes up on pretty much every one of our videos, because we're sort of brand ambassadors for Rotobrope. So we're always trying to get the mag drills into the videos when we're doing them for those guys. And I don't think I put a video out and somebody doesn't go, man, you need to get yourself an iron worker. You're pissing time away with that mag drill. And I'm like, yeah, I know, but I'm like, I've spent all my money this year. I've put a crane in. We've upgraded the welder. We've upgraded the bandsaw. I'm like, I'm just broke. I try not to. We don't at the moment. Nothing's on finance. It's when I've got the money at the moment. We're buying the new kit to go in there. It could be a difficult year, 2023 at the moment. Everyone's got financial situations at the moment. Things are costing a lot. There's people struggling to pay their mortgages and bits and pieces, and the UK economy is maybe not doing as well as it could be. There's been a few questionable political decisions been made over the previous few years, and we've had, this year wasn't no better, to be fair. And it's took a bit of a hammering over the old economy. And I just don't particularly at the moment want to be spending money on equipment when that money might be better off just kept in the bank for a minute or two. I know you gotta spend it to make it, and we've spent it to make it. But I think we need to get through this year now and just make sure that the work's there at the moment. But it could start to slow up if we have if this recession that's predicted for the UK does start to bite. So yeah, we shall see. But an iron worker by the end of 2023 will have hopefully is a ticket item I'm hoping to get. it'll be good in the workshop. I've got to figure out where I'm going to put it. That's the problem.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That's always the problem.
And I've just laid the workshop out that it works so well. I just don't want to have to move all of the stuff around again to make it work. Make it work with an iron worker in hand. If I could get one that would work, that it will utilize the new roller system that we put in for the bandsaw. If I could get it that it's low enough, I may even be able to dig a pit to put it in, so I can get it low enough so that you can put everything onto the rollers and you roll left-handed to get to the bandsaw, or you roll right-handed to go to the iron worker. And that may work, which would be perfect, because there's a little space at the end of the rollers that it could go in.
Sure.
My luck would suggest that probably when I buy an iron worker, no matter how much I do my research, I'll end up with a deck height that's about 50 mil higher than my roller table, but we can cross that bridge when we get to it.
So what we do with our iron worker is because we have a Scotch bit. It's like a 50514 or something, and it has a shear on it, and then all the other equipment for it goes up underneath of the arm, so the arm comes down, and so it has an angle shear that you put up underneath the arm, and then you bolt it down the arm, and then you just put it to the shear mode, and then it comes down and shears it off. But the problem is those are two different heights. And then the punch on the front end of it is a different height. And then you've got, ours has a nibbler on it. It's, I'm sure there's a actual technical name for it. But I call it the nibbler. So
I like it. It works.
If you're taking a piece of angle iron and you want to make a box without coping it, you can just take off, 2x2 angle. You just, it's like 2.5 inches wide. You just take it off, shear it. It's beautiful, but you just can't make it work. And our shop is pretty small and we just can't afford the real estate to set up designated spots. So what we do is we have different rollers. Our rollers go. So I specifically designed. We built our own rollers. So we bought a conveyor that we had a conveyor. Somebody ran into it with a forklift, and now we just have a bunch of rollers. So I took the rollers and I modified. Like we made little tabs and we modified them, and then I've got like inch and a quarter or inch and a half all thread and nuts, and we made these super heavy duty stands, but we have them set up there so that they are exactly at the right height. Relatively exactly at the right height to, this one's for the angle shear so that you can put it on here and then boom, it lines up. Well, this one is made for, this one is specifically adjusted for the flat bar shear. But the thing is that they have so much adjustment on them that we can use it for either one. So if you're like, hey, I need another one and it's in use, well, you can just adjust it all the way down and it'll fit the flat bar shear. And then what we do is we mark out on our concrete where they go. So that way you know that it's going to be square with your piece. And as long as nobody touches the adjustment on it, theoretically, it should be pretty darn close to where it should be. Because I had the idea of trying to utilize rollers and, this is a right in feed, this is a left in feed. And it just, for our setup, it won't work. Just food for thought. If you, if you're running in a tight space like that, it could just make it modular and just have them set up specifically for the correct size and just mark out where the feet go. You know what I mean?
No, I can see that would work really well, actually. Because I was sort of thinking of doing something similar, because whenever we're bringing beams into the workshop and the fabrication horses that we lay the beams out on, they're always being moved around. And whenever we're sort of doing a decent job, we've got adjustable feet on the bottom of them, and I like to get them all leveled up, perfectly level, so that then if we're putting end plates on, you can just stick a little Stabilo torpedo magnetic level on the two faces of it. If they're 90 degrees here, you go to the other end, you put your plate on the other end, they're 90 degrees. You can't go wrong. And I was toying with the idea as well, whether or not I like sink some socket, drill a floor out and sink some sockets into the floor of the workshop, that then we can just put the horses back onto the tops of them again. And sure, as long as you've got hole one in hole one, they're perfectly level, because the amount of times you end up moving them around, and our floor is not perfect. It's not a if I was laying it again, well, it wasn't laid to be a workshop. It was laid to be like a machinery shed, and it's not the levelest in the world. So yeah, anything to do that you can, a bit like you've sort of marked your floor up. If you repetitive jobs that need to be going back again, if you can just go right, if I've got those legs in those holes or in these marks on the floor, we know we're level to start. It's just speeds your productivity up no end, doesn't it? You're not fluffing around getting stuff ready to go. You're into your work straight away then, which is what we all really want to be doing, is working, not fluffing.
Well, that's it for this episode. Hope you guys really enjoyed it. Check back next week for episode 2 with Adam from Semmons Fabrication. Check him out on Instagram at Semmons Steel Fabrication. Find us at Welding Business Owners Podcast. Find me at JMW Fabrication. And we'll see you next week.